Hey everybody, welcome to My Opening Movies. This week we're talking a graveyard shift. That's right, we're staying in King Country as we put together yet another movie. And in fact, in some ways, this one smells to me the most like a King movie we've done, if that makes sense. It's got very simple setup, a couple scenes where people are drinking in a bar, a monster, and the asshole dies. Like, it's kind of just a perfect, nice setup. Don't have to think about it. Not high concept King movie. And it's pretty good. At least it was fun to watch. Anyway, we want to thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting us. And thanks for sharing. Anything you can do to keep us on the charts and keep us in other people's ears, please share with us. Next week, we're doing a King project. He wrote one of the stories and he wrote the overall script. But we're doing the 1982 Creepshow, which also stars Stephen King. So get King by the spoonful there. And then, thanks for all you do. Bye.
Welcome to our Stephen King month on Myopia Movies. Of course, last week we started with the classic car movie, Christine, and this week we have jumped. I don't remember if I said this in the episode, I probably did, but we're not doing The Fog because it turns out Stephen King had nothing to do with that.
My bad.
Instead, we are doing Graveyard Shift, a 1990s movie based on a King short story where he appears as the Rat King. I'm your host, Nick Hoffman, and on panel we've got...
Atlanta author Matthew W. Quinn, who had to come up with this one real quick because The Fog was my mistake. Mea culpa. I will now whip myself like in future episode Silent Night, Deadly Night.
And Kiego.
And Steve, you may know me from
6 years ago.
Pointless attempts at clinging to relevance and probably nothing else.
I'm Charlie Rose.
This is... I'm going to guess made on a made-for-TV budget. No one's in this except for Brad Dourif for 10 minutes.
No way. Did you see the bad guy? Like, it was so cool. That was their whole budget.
It was. And they do it right because we only see the bad guy for 7 seconds. Like, the whole thing at the very end as he's eating the
horn. Well, not really. We get glimpses of it because I kept changing my mind as to what I thought this monster was. So, like, the first little glimpse, I'm like, okay, it's a crab. It's an evil crab. It's
evil
a crab
crab,
monster.
Yes.
Then we see something else. I'm like, okay, it's a bat. You know, all right, change my mind. It's a bat. Then we see something. And then I'm like, okay, it's like a...
crab bat?
Crab bat. And then it has like a scorpion appendage. So it's a crab bat scorpion.
Yeah.
Sorry. It's a spoiler to reveal what the monster is.
I appreciate the imagination, though. I just thought it was a rat the whole movie because I'm...
Why?
I don't have any
it had claws.
Because there were rats everywhere. And, you know, rats and mutations.
I feel a song coming on you. Here comes a giant rat underneath a mill.
I don't even know... I'm sorry. No,
let's actually continue because I want to know where this is.
I don't remember. I didn't have made up the rest of the lyrics yet.
Oh, so you're still working on it.
That'll be a Substack premium post, maybe.
Just loop that in post.
World According to Quinn Substack.
Wait,
check
how
does
it
out.
Go? Here comes
the giant rat.
Underneath
the
wait. I got it. You're doing Men in Black.
Yes.
Oh no, that's Here Comes a Giant Rat.
See?
Living under the mill and eating dudes.
Okay, you should have a barbershop quartet.
Whoever's editing this and pull this out, pull out his music, I'll loop it over the credits.
Alrighty.
I had no idea. Wow.
I didn't either. I see it now though.
Yeah. Okay.
Will Smith gonna slap us for copyright infringement.
Moving swiftly along.
The graveyard shift, Stephen King and a series of OSHA violations.
The most pro-labor horror film of all time.
Oh, no, dude. If anything, this was like, he goes, you have 4 weeks, well, you can join the union. And I'm just like, dude, you need to join it right now.
I really liked how the movie opened on this, like, machine you know, just chugging away, and I was like, somebody's gonna eat it on that machine. Like,
totally.
100%.
I bet you didn't guess it was going to be a giant bat rat scorpion thing.
No, I hadn't figured that out at the beginning of the movie yet.
Well, at one point, you see it going into the water like a crocodile. You see its tail going up.
Yeah.
The batadile, the ratadile. This is some Dr. Moreau
rat-a-crab
shit.
Rat-a-crab, a scorpion, a dial.
Oh.
People have been drinking this water too. It's pretty unsettling.
Well, I do love, okay. Before we go any further,
let's break it down. What's this movie really about?
Matt, please give us a plot synopsis.
All right, so it's a mill in this small town in Maine where everyone sounds like the guy from Pet Sematary, and this young man who's a college student, I think he's widowed or divorced or something, because they do shots of his wedding ring. He's trying to get a fresh start in this town, and the skeezy foreman of the mill basically hires him as a temp or something to clean out the nasty basement that is going to get the mill shut down. He basically pays off the OSHA inspector to come back next week
with $200.
$200.
I mean, in Bush 1.0 bucks.
I mean, I guess that was a lot of money in 1990.
In 1990 in rural Maine, that's $200.
So there's the workers he doesn't like, including this woman who had turned down his advances because he's a skis bag on multiple levels. Like, he's banging at least one of the employees who might bang more. And so they're supposed to clean out the basement under the mill. But as we mentioned earlier at the beginning, somebody is lunch. There's something under the mill. Nom, 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 nom.
So the mill is actually a really interesting point of this movie.
Yeah.
The Bartlett Mill, I did some research. This was more interesting than the movie for me. The historic Bartlett Mill. And there's still an operation. It's still an operational mill. I mean, you can go to their website, bartlettyarns.com. They're not sponsoring this episode, but if they want to, that's fine. They sell lovely 2 and 3 ply yarn. You can buy rug yarn. You can buy sports swirls. It's incredible. So check them out. I mean, honest to goodness, like, jokes aside, this mill is actually a very creepy, like, they had a very intrinsically creepy setting for this movie, because this mill is just, you know, it's kind of old and rusted and 200 years old, and it's lovely.
But do they have a rat problem? Like, do they have a basement that's, like, collapsed with, like, some kind of weird corpse river underneath that is never, like, really explained?
Do they have an adjacent graveyard?
Yeah.
Well, but I mean, and our lovely panelists here bring up the important point here, which is, why on earth would they sign up for it? It's in the same way that, like, why did SeaWorld allow Jaws 3 to be filmed there? Like,
I think we were speaking about
dump truck full of money. Isn't that how everything gets done in Hollywood?
$200.
I think they needed a cash advance to get this movie out the door. So now they're on the hook for marketing for bartlettyarns.com to this day.
I do appreciate how intrinsically creepy New England is, though, because you're right. The building is creepy. I didn't know that they made mills in the style of the Amityville Horror House, because it's got the big eyes, it looms, and Brad Dourif apparently just shows up with a giant rat vacuum and just shoots them into the river.
That was the most real thing, because when it starts, you know, you're listening and you hear the foreman, and he's got a strange accent. You're not really sure what's going on there.
Yeah, I think he's, like, supposed to be some sort of, like, Russian.
Well, it's supposed to be a Mainer accent. And it's a bad Mainer.
I'm a strong son of New England.
Is it? I thought he was supposed to be foreign based on the way he was saying his words.
That is what people think Maine sounds
like. I think that is what people think. That. Well, let me put it to you this way. That is totally like Fred Gwynn from, like, the original Pet Sematary.
Pepperidge Farm remembers. Pepperidge Farm remembers where that body is hidden. But that's what this is. He's doing the...
Yeah.
Okay.
Pepperidge Farm is going to blackmail you to do some extermination work for free. Well, because I'm a real dickhead.
Brad Dourif's there, and he's got this heavy Southern accent. And so I'm guessing that they probably said, can you do a Maine accent? And he tried, and they're like, oh, no. Why don't you stick with the Southern accent?
I was going to say, he put his foot down and said, sir, I am Brad Dourif, and I have one accent. But then I realized this is 1990. He is not he's done, like, the first Chucky movie, but he is not horror staple Brad Dourif in the way that I think of him. However, he shows up and he steals the movie whenever he's on screen, because he looks into your eyes and is like,
black eyes like a rat's eyes. And she's like, what are you talking? He's
Quint from Jaws with a Vietnam backstory involving rats.
Yeah.
And a mullet.
And his monologue, I want to hear the comparison. Like, which is better, the Jaws monologue or this guy's
It's close.
Trauma? It's
because close. He's back there and goes, I was there at Joe's apartment in 1996. The roaches took everything. He had a tear going down.
He's talking about like the Viet Cong staking out American prisoners and shoving rats into their wounds and stuff. Yeah, and he's just going on and on, and poor college boy is like, how do I get out of here?
And just if you're on your computer, on your phone right now, pull up a picture of Brad Dourif. Go to IMDb and pull up Brad Dourif's photo, because he is wearing a straw hat and he looks adorable.
You can watch this, the whole video on YouTube. It's called the Vietnamalog or something like that.
It's great. Really?
It's good. But anyway, Brad Dourif is one of my favorites, of course. Previous episode, he was in Lord of the Rings. He's Wormtongue. And he's in the second one and the third one, I believe. Definitely in the second one, which we've done. And of course, he's the voice of Chucky. And he just has a really kind of intense, creepy, unbreaking eye. So he's in a lot of horror shit.
In his credit for this film is The Exterminator. They didn't even bother to give this guy a name. He's just that professional that we don't want to associate human-like qualities with him.
Which, by the way, better movie if we just follow this asshole around and then the rat, like the showdown is between him and the rat, bats, and elephants and shores.
Absolutely. It would be a better movie if it actually had featured him. I mean, instead we get, low-rent Fred Ward, who Fred Ward, I guess, is a low-rent Robert De Niro, trying to, save the day and, I don't know, kill the monster at the end?
Low-rent Fred. The one that reminded me of Fred Ward is the foreman.
That's what I was saying.
So
foreman.
I want to see this movie. Fred Ward was the non-union Mexican equivalent of Fred Ward, who's a villain.
I was going to say more like the Halloween Store version of Fred Ward.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, and then we have Bert Sizzlechest, our hero, who is the most boring person I've ever seen as the hero of the story. Mm-hmm.
Are you kidding me? He carries a slingshot around with him.
Okay, but this is why it's a short story and the adaptation is weird. Because I think the message is, this is like a hardworking guy who got screwed over and he made it through this treacherous situation.
No, this is just a string of Stephen King tropes.
But he's,
yeah, the AI. AI, this is like if AI was told.
Ingested all of his work.
Yeah.
No,
that's a great example.
AI,
that's
what I was thinking. I need a movie about rats and. And
I want you to
rats,
use
but make it
all
King.
The Stephen King tropes to tell this story.
Use
because you've got the Drifter. The Drifter. Who uses a slingshot to save the day because he carries it with him.
Chekhov's slingshot.
Yeah, you've got the small main town. You've got the creepy, exterminator guy. I mean, the bullies, the classic bullies, the bullies classic getting bullies. Their comeuppance. I mean, Stephen King's got a type. And every one of these people is the type.
Yep. I mean, and here's the thing. I've read a lot of his books and I've seen a lot of his movies, and I like Stephen King, period, punctuation. Yeah. No caveats here, but this is a Mad Lib Stephen King, set in a blank main town, poor main town, right? Set in a blank business. This time it's not, Christine is set in a garage. This is...
I think you're onto something. Yeah. I think this sounds like a fun group game. Let's get Stephen King on the phone and pitch it. Come on.
Okay, so this time it's an affluent town, and the main character is going to travel through time, and he's going to stop the Kennedy assassination. Boom!
And along the way, he meets the kids from It at one point.
Yes, he does.
In the 63 book.
Yeah, he does.
And you've just sort of tail-ended us into the Dark Tower. Thank you.
You've closed the circle. And by the way, if this Drifter becomes a flag from the circle, from Dark Tower, it's all the same at this point.
There we go.
Again, you said this is Bush's America. This is George H.W. Bush America. $200 will pay off OSHA. Clearly the bureaucracy is falling apart. Infrastructure is dying. Unions don't matter. We're this close to the apocalypse with rat creatures. All right. We should mention just the cold open, which blew me away, is the guy who had the job before.
Yep.
And he's just feeding Dorothy the rat, who pees all over his chair.
I think it's Dolores.
Dolores. Excuse me, yes.
And because Dolores is not a lady. Because she peed on the chair.
Dolores, you're no lady. And so he, like, whatever, spites her. And then the monster comes out to eat her. Him?
Which yeah. Is
fantastic. Does it actually eat him or does he go into the grinder?
Call me, you know, hey.
Look. I assume he gets eaten if only in the basement there is that pile of bones, which is never explained.
The people keep disappearing. So, like, that's why they keep just sending more people down there. Because
that makes sense. Yeah, oh, well, he disappeared in the middle of the shift, didn't take his check. It happens again.
Yeah, the now hiring sign keeps coming up.
So I watched the movie with closed captions on.
Oh, thank God.
Because I have kids and you just have to do that when you have kids. I don't know, something happens and you can't hear anymore. And it actually said in the beginning, like when that guy was taunting the rats and the rats were like getting riled up and like staring at him, it said cringy theme playing.
The cringy theme?
Yeah.
Is cringy theme just cover spoken grinding?
It was cringy theme.
It's that like, you know, the just creepy, like, oh, the rats are looking at me music. That's why I thought that was funny.
At least it's not Willard.
Oh my.
I love John Williams, but he just gave everyone a cheat sheet how to make horror movies with Jaws, right? For what? Well, and then Carpenter comes along and he's just like,
with the electronic music.
That's right. And now, what's his name? Hans Zimmer with like the tent with the Chris Nolan stuff. We're just like, that's all you need. And so, creepy theme. It's just a mixture of Carpenter and Jaws, and then pow, we have dissonant sounds. I kind of love it. We're fine.
We're getting very close to being. I mean, you mentioned AI earlier, and we mentioned John Williams, John Williams is very like. Yeah, a fantastic composer, but I think AI can just nail it. You've got such a big sample size. Like, we could put this whole movie together with AI.
Okay. And that's why there's a strike on.
And it would probably be better.
You know, you keep doing it. I have an idea here. Okay, so.
He's plugging in the port now. We got an AI script coming.
So, the guy is killed. He's eaten. Or ground up or turned into,
either way, as our esteemed host would put it, he's super dead.
The number of ground up bodies that end up in that cotton, they called it a cotton picker.
It's not a cotton picker. It's a pink mister, let's be honest.
It's a pink mister.
It's a gin. So cotton picker picks the cotton from the field. Cotton gin separates the seed from the cotton. Yes, I know these things. Raised in the South, do you know?
Yeah, see the foreskin.
Eli Whitney every year. Yeah, up until I think I was in 10th grade. Yeah,
the force ghost of Eli Whitney is like watching someone getting ground up the machine. He's like, no.
I never intended for these electronic machines.
But yeah, so like I don't want to wear cotton now because who knows? Like how much rat viscera is in my clothes.
Probably true.
It's probably very true.
Rat viscera, low carbs.
I was going to say though, like how you show up at a job and there's this many rats, unless you're like guy at the rat house at the zoo, which is first of all not a house at the zoo. You leave. Like if this was an Arby's, it would have been shut down probably months from now.
It would have been
months from now.
Okay, so everyone listen around the table. I'm going to ask you for various things. Give me a magical element.
Mithril?
Something magical that happens in the world. But I can do it. I can do magical armor.
Okay.
I don't think mithril is a magical.
I don't think it's like a magical metal.
I was like, that was really good. I don't know.
Give me a place. Like a, not specific, but like broad. Like countryside or forest or whatever.
Let's do at the beach.
Okay. Give me a character type.
A mustache twirling tycoon.
Okay.
I think it's going to make Jaws.
And give me a hero type.
Let's say the last girl.
Last girl?
Last girl.
All right, ChatGPT, let's see what you can do.
You're prompting it for Stephen King, right? Generate a Stephen King. Okay, cool.
In the picturesque coastal town of Seaview, a dark mystical secret lies beneath the waves. When an enigmatic tycoon arrives seeking the legendary magical armor buried deep within the sands, he unwittingly sets off a series of chilling events. A fearless, alluring last girl becomes the town's only hope to confront the malevolent forces unleashed by the armor and the secrets that lay hidden beneath the depths of the ocean.
Well, there you go.
We have pitched.
Wow, ChatGPT could generate plots.
Oh, dude, easy peasy. The synopsis is five paragraphs.
You can also.
Like, there's even more.
Oh, there's more. This is just the tagline.
You can turn it into a screenplay.
Yes, you could.
Which is why we have the strike.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. But also, this is utter nonsense. However, we're talking about an utter nonsense movie. Good movies will still, like, they'll still be a Wes Anderson, but Netflix will be filled with this nonsense unless, you know, SAG-AFTRA, support your local unions. But anyway.
It'll be like Hallmark Christmas royal movies all the time.
I happen to love those.
And saving the poinsettia farm and like, well, where are we going to get a turkey this late? And
inheriting a random castle from a relative you didn't know
about.
I mean,
isn't it always the problem? That's like Christmas Prince, right?
Prince is showing up out of nowhere for Christmas.
I mean, that's the problem in today's America. Just too many princes.
Too many princes. Right.
Two princes. Princes who adore you. Just go ahead.
I hate this. I only acknowledge
it. So back to the movie that has all the Stephen King tropes. Actually, all the Stephen King tropes except for the magical black man.
That's right.
I thought it was magical black woman.
No, there wasn't even a magical black woman.
Yeah, because there's Mother Abigail in the stand, but there's John Coffey and...
Yeah.
I was expecting...
The Tom Hanks one where... Green Mile.
I was expecting a character because like, okay, so like the movie starts.
Well, there's your problem
and,
right there.
Okay, well, hang on. So like, you know, everybody's horrible, right? All these people are horrible. Like, I don't care about any of them. And I'm like, all right, it's established. The only way I can enjoy this movie is if I go on the rat side. So like 20 minutes in, I was rooting for the rats, but I was like hoping for a character, a human to come in who like showed some kind of empathy, and like every new character that gets introduced, I'm like, okay, maybe this is the one that's going to be like nice to the rats.
Nope,
and
maybe, back again. Maybe,
yeah, no, everybody just died.
Well, that's great.
And I thought the black guy was going to be that person though. Yeah. I thought he was going to be the one that was like good.
Well, the only two strong characters in this one are the foreman, because he's just such a piece of trash, and the exterminator, because he's just cool in a creepy way.
Well, and he's not killing the rats. Well, except for that one. When he first meets our main character.
He's like eating a rat or something. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, he just like holds out the rat and goes, takes it with his other hand to shake hands. It's very strange.
No, he was eating. Like he had his mouth, he was like chewing. And so I don't know if he was eating the rat. I don't know if he was eating a sandwich and holding the rat. I don't know.
I mean, that's hopefully what you do, I guess.
Let's hope he washes his hands.
You don't want to mix up your... You got a sandwich hand and a rat hand. You do not mix them up. It's first rule of exterminating.
Especially with that lovely food at the diner, which we never see.
right.
No, but you bring up a very good point, is that none of these characters are relatable. Even the main character, the drifter, John, he's like, they don't give his backstory enough for you to care.
Yeah, no, like, I didn't care.
Even if you gave like a 5-minute introduction to him, like what he's leaving, like maybe his wife and his daughter died in a fire and now he's trying to like start over, then yeah, maybe you can like, you know, empathize with the guy. But all
he
these
did
people,
used to work in a diner.
He did work as a
The character who has a backstory I could think of are Vietnam guy and Wisconsky, the woman, because she was divorced.
Oh, Jane, yes.
We do get like 30 seconds with her to explain like why it's okay that they're about to go to Pound Town, but like that's kind of it. It's also, I mean, again, it's, I assume, an R-rated movie. It's a strangely chaste.
They dropped some F-bombs, so I'm pretty sure it's rated R.
Mm-hmm. Well, and there's a lot of blood and violence.
Yeah, it's an R. It's an
R-rated. I was actually a little bit bothered by the scene where the foreman like attacks the lady and everybody in the town's just like,
it's weird.
After she beats up his
the
car.
The first cut of this movie, actually.
That was like,
that's a Maury Povich shit there.
Yep. The first cut of the movie got an X rating. they had to cut a lot of the gore, and apparently a nude scene involving Wisconsky was cut as well.
I saw the edited version.
Oh, so you saw the director's cut. You saw her naked.
No, I didn't see her. The edited.
No, this was so it could be make it from an X to an R.
I just saw the one that was on Amazon for $2.
I don't think that they have a director's cut of this movie.
Well, no, but we're going to repeat this conversation because that was one of the things about the other movie that we're going to be watching. That you'll see.
Oh, yeah. No problem with nudity in that. Opinions on that one.
Yeah.
But yeah, for a horror movie in the 80s, 90s, for it not to
show. How many boobies?
I was going to say, there were no boobies. No boobies. It can't be a horror movie.
Yeah, because it sounded like she wanted him to come home with her for pounding, but always see them eating.
For pounding.
Okay.
We're talking about
someone being beaten up.
No, I thought they were going back to have sex. But instead, they're just sitting out of her trailer or something, eating dinner.
Like someone being beaten up. Okay,
she was talking about assaulting. I referred to intercourse earlier as going to Pound Town, and so he was conflagrating.
Okay. Yeah. So anyway, yeah, this movie was surprisingly chaste when it comes to sex.
Yes.
Full of curse words and bigotry. Oh my gosh. Oh yeah, a little bit of bigotry. Like, and gross. It was just gross.
There's like a scene where a guy gets his head wrapped around the bat wing and you see his face pushing up against it. That was well done.
Well, I was gonna say,
yeah,
the problem is that sexual assault scene is not needed. It comes out of nowhere. It doesn't make sense. And then it also doesn't make sense
but why she... This movie's coming out of the 80s.
But it does make you
really an 80s movie unless there's attempted rape? I mean, I'm just saying.
No, you're not wrong.
It does make sense. Nardello is pissed that asshole Foreman is making a move on Wisconsky, and so she goes after his car. It's a Mari Povich shit here. He's my man.
No, but why does it have to be in there at all? These aren't characters. So, like, have him show up and rape.
It makes you dislike the Foreman more, I think. Like, at that was the point where I was like, okay, he is just, like, absolutely
terrible. They needed to drive him as an absolute
terrible. Scum. Yeah. Like, there's nothing good about this person.
And that seemed, like, bothered me a little bit, because it looked like, that wasn't, like...
He was really rough.
Yeah, legitimately very rough. Like,
dude, when he's outside the car, we're talking, okay, so let's just paint the picture. He has a girl of some sort, a girlfriend of some sort that we barely see in this movie, but he's hitting on this woman who works for him. So outside of a diner, they decide to have a showdown, and he like throws her up against the fender. He slaps the hell out of her. It's our hero who steps in, Tom Hall or whatever his name is. But again, to me, we get that he's an asshole. We don't need to have him like assaulting this. He's already hitting on the coworker. It's really just... Sitting here, I just accomplished one of my watch goals. So
good for you.
Podcasting is hard. I do gesture a lot. but at the end of the, I mean, if you're not watching the video feed, it's coming out of Matt's eyes.
Out of context. I'm not drunk. I'm just Italian. Sorry for knocking over your beer.
Shit. Anyway, so yes, we make him the villain, not only because he has a main accent, but also because he's assaulting people. But they need him at the end for some reason to go down into the caves, which is weird. The last third of this movie is essentially aliens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they go into the deep, dark place.
Yes.
And they have to, like, stay alive because the monster is chasing them through. And they can't get out easily.
My favorite is Meathead guy with the hose.
Yes.
Brogan?
Brogan.
Yeah, he's one. There are a bunch of the small town bullies who pick on our hero because he's been to college or something. So it ends up with our hero, the small town bullies, this random black guy who people aren't nice to, the woman, and they guilt trip asshole Foreman into going along with him.
Yeah, for some reason, the Foreman decides to give him the power to choose another person to go down with him. And he's like, I choose.
I'm not a
you, Foreman.
And it's just like, what just happened?
Well, guy quits in the middle of it.
I will say though, Matt, you nailed it. The black guy, the woman, the big guy, like, because none of these are characters.
Right. that one guy and that other guy, and they were all down there.
The Weasley white guy who was, I don't know. What He looked like someone. Who did he look like?
Are you talking about the guy? There was a guy that I kept thinking looked like the guy from Firefly Lane, like the Australian guy from Firefly, like mildly like him, but I was like, to the point that I was like, wait, was this him like when he was
Firefly? Like Steve the Pirate? Like Firefly? Like
Firefly Slater, Lane. Ethan, yeah, no, he had a bit of like a Slater vibe. Like
Ethan Hawk.
Yeah. Ethan Hawk, you know, I mean, low rent Ethan Hawke. Oh, low rent
you're talking about Dan, the character Danson.
Yeah.
That's a character actor, Andrew Divoff, who's also in Wishmaster. He's in Air Force One as one of the Russian baddies. He's in future episode Toy Soldier, which if you've not seen Toy Soldier.
Ooh, that's a movie.
Do you remember this one?
I remember Toy Soldier.
Okay, it's Sean Astin, Will Wheaton, Kevin Keith Coogan. And
it takes place at a military boarding school.
Yeah.
Of course I remember that. That was like a fever dream when I was in high school.
And Denholm Elliott from Indiana Jones is the headmaster, and a bunch of terrorists take over the building to hold the rich kids hostage.
You need to let me know when we're recording that one.
Yeah.
So I've
watched it a lot.
I saw that one too.
Lou Gossett Jr. is in it too. Like it's nuts. And by the way, Keith Coogan's character is Snuffy Bradbury.
In this movie?
No,
in
Toy Soldier. But yeah, Andrew Divoff is kind of B movie royalty. He just appears in everything.
So that's like, this movie. Was there was kind of a Snuffberry in this movie? So so what did you
Yeah, like, that was one of the people's names. That was the name of the rat. Remember.
So what did the rat's name Snuffberry?
So what did you like about this film? I heard Will Wheaton and I got excited and sidetracked, but that's not what this film was about.
Well, I am into animal actors. So I was curious about the doggy, but I couldn't find any information on if the doggy, Roxy, the exterminator's doggy, was in anything else. Because it reminded me of the dog from Zeus and Roxanne, but I was like, I don't know if the timing is right or whatever. I don't think it was the dog from Zeus and Roxanne, but that was one of my favorites as a kid.
You're pitching Dog MDB, and I'm here for it.
I thought it would have already existed, that's what I was like. Dog actor in Graveyard Shift. I was like, I'm not. I mean,
this sounds like
a
thing that could probably make millions.
So
I mean, it might be very depressing though, because there'd be 17 Otises for Milo and Otis, and you're just like, oh no.
Well, and so that was my point, because like we're seeing rats on rafts, we're seeing rats get slingshotted in the face. So I was curious about the welfare of the rat actors. And actually, this movie has a really good like credit for taking really good care of the rat actors. Oh. So like even the scene with the slingshot, they would like shoot in front of the rat, and then the person holding the rat from behind the scenes would safely whisk them away before anything happened.
Does like the rat trainer get proper credits? Nice. Because you
maybe.
But you're right. You know damn well that guy worked harder than anyone else.
They were trained by clickers. Oh, yeah. It said that they were trained by clickers.
Okay.
And also that they didn't think that the rats would be scary enough on their own, so they had voice actors.
So it was Frank Welker got paid, is what you're saying.
I mean, rats are kind of cute. Well, if you don't like, you're not surprised by one in your closet.
I think rats are cute.
I
told you my rat story, right?
You did. You can put it if you want to share it.
Yeah, I'll tell you guys. I'll record this.
I'm curious. I am enraptured. Please,
enraptured.
In my car, at one point about 2 years ago, I found like some sort of rodent's nest under the seat. Like, we have toddlers, right? So we have like goldfish. There's like stray chicken nuggets like in the car, you know, it's just a mess. And it had taken a tennis ball and like shredded the outside of the tennis ball and made like a little bed. It looked really cozy. I was like, if I was a rat, I think that would look cozy to me.
I'm disgusted, but also impressed.
Anyway, so I cleaned it all out, whatever. We got, we figured it was chipmunks. We have a lot of chipmunks in our yard. But I was like, I don't know, some kind of rodent. And I was like, maybe a rat. So my six-year-old decided that it was a rat and its name is Kasha. And so we call her Kasha the car rat. And so like for 2 years, Kasha the car rat, like whenever they'll be like, who's in your family? He'll be like, mommy, daddy, his brother, you know, cat and dog, and Kasha. And Kasha, so like Kasha was a legit part of our family. He would draw a family portrait, and he would draw a little rat.
But you never saw Kasha.
We never saw
Kasha. We don't even know if it was actually a rat.
We don't know if it was a rat until.
Dun, dun, dun.
The story's on. About to turn, gentlemen.
I'm on the edge of my seat.
We need cringy theme music.
Cringy music, yes.
So a couple weeks ago, I was picking up my younger son at daycare and like getting him into the car, and I smelled something like rancid. I was like, ugh, there's like a dead animal somewhere. And there was like a drain on the ground, one of those big grate kind of drains, like an it drain. And I was like, there's probably just something dead down there. So then get home, we're getting him out of the car, and I smell it again. And I'm like, okay, there's something like either, it's, I don't think it's inside the car, but so then I'm looking around the car, I'm like, did I run over something? I saw something furry in the hubcap, like in between the, you know, the tire and the hubcap. And so I got a stick and I started like just ramming the stick into this little hole. And I'm seeing fur, and then like, and the kids are like, what is it, mommy? What is it? And I'm poking, and then the little tail falls out. And
can you set the scene? Are all the children like spectating?
Yeah, and I'm like, stand back, stay back, because they're trying to get close. And I'm like, jamming this stick in this hole, and I can feel its little body like resisting. It's like stuck on something. And I'm like, and then the tail comes out, and my 3-year-old, he's 4 now. I forgot he's 4. He's like, mommy, it's a real tail. And they're like, oh, it's Kasha. It's Kasha.
Oh, no.
And so then I'm like, jamming. And this is really gross, actually. Like, more of the bottom part of it comes out. So I stick the stick on the front and try to pull, but like, it like opened a little bit. Whoa. So then I went back to the top because I felt that would be less traumatizing to the kids. And then I grabbed a leaf and I grabbed the tail and I pulled the tail, like, you know, like with a leaf, you know, so I wasn't just holding its tail. And I got it out and I was like gagging. Like, the whole, I was like, ugh. And the kids were like, what, mommy? What? And I was like, it just smells really bad. And I threw it in the yard.
That is hilarious. That was more entertaining than this movie.
And then someone walked away with a lawnmower immediately.
Because Keiko is a fully developed character. These people are not.
Yeah. Brad Dourif reading that monologue would have been very intense.
But you bring up a very good point. The rats, as actors in this movie, are actually pretty compelling.
Yes. Yeah.
They're creepy. They're well-trained. I mean, in 2023, this would be done with CGI.
Yeah.
Well, but the practical effects, gotta appreciate them.
And the way that they do it is that we don't know how this rats and cracks the oxidile thing is related to them, but that they're always watching. It's very unsettling. And again, like, we're introduced to it at the beginning, but our hero opens up this bag and like 6 rats pull out, and then they line back up against the wall, and you're just like, this is his life now, and he sees it. There are parts of this that I think work. It's just that this is not a movie. This would have been a good short story in an anthology film like Stay Tuned Creepshow. Like, just something that's a 25-minute or 30-minute short story.
Totally agree.
Much tighter. But like, the idea that we keep going back to that damn diner for him to be mildly harassed by the Yoko locals, and he kind of has a relationship with someone who is not established. Like, our hero has to hook up with someone, right? So there's one other woman in town other than the waitress. So she's got to be in love with, like, it's all nonsense. But the rat part is interesting. Like, the roaches at the end of Creepshow. Like, there's just something about it that I kind of like.
No, you're right. They did fill it with a lot of unnecessary things. I mean, it's...
Well, they had 120 minutes to fill.
No.
It was a short story.
No. 86 minutes.
Oh,
an hour and 26 minutes, not...
Oh, it was an hour? Okay, yeah.
So it was a tight, tight, short movie.
This is shorter than Little Mermaid, the cartoon version. It's also shorter than the musical live-action movie by about half an hour.
I feel a song coming on, Kiss the Rat.
Ooh, gross. Now, when you say that, I didn't think about this movie. I thought about Keiko's rat.
I'm thinking about Kasha. Little Mermaid. Kasha. What was that reference?
Look at this rat. Isn't it neat?
Doesn't it look like something you'd eat? Wouldn't you think a girl who eats everything? I don't know. I think I'm...
I want to close. Be where the rodents are. I want to see
them scurry, running around on those... What are they called? Oh, paws.
I have more fun talking about it than watching it.
Yeah, you know what? Like, once you decide you're on the rat side, it got a lot more fun. Like, yeah. I will say, the first, like, 30 minutes, maybe it was around the 20-minute mark of this movie, I was like, this sucks. I'm like, this is weird. This is creepy. I feel like Matt, it explains some things about your psyche. I think that did you like this movie as a kid? Like,
I remember seeing bits and bobs of it. I think on UPN.
So it wasn't.
And
like
I'm not
your
sure how well
movie.
I remember it, because I could swear on the one I saw on TV, the rat was flying.
It has
it
wings.
Has wings.
Yeah, but I mean, you see it full on flying.
You know, this might.
You're thinking of Night Flyer.
Yes.
Yeah. The.
No. It might be.
It's pretty hard
no,
to find.
No, I saw Night Flyer later.
Or the Langoliers. That thing kind of flies. Mm-hmm.
But then, what I was going to say, though, is like once I decided, I was like, screw these people. They all suck. I'm on the rat side. Yep. Get them.
Yeah.
And then I'm like finding joy in the next person who is getting got by the monster. And yeah.
I also do like how, for the most part, the rats are just watching like, good, get another one. as though the Rat King thing there is like their golem, and it's yeah, just, it and is. They're sending him to kill.
It's saving some food for the pack.
That's
and they
right.
all just yeah. feast now, and they fucking party.
It's I do like that the rats are eating the corpses too, which yeah. is kind of great.
Yeah. That thing is like their god.
Now,
well, it's not really clear. Like they, who works for who? Do the rats work for him?
Oh, do the little rats work for the big monster, or does the big monster work for the little rat? I don't know.
Someone write the fanfic.
No, please, God.
there is no God here, Nick.
Make it a song.
It's based on a short story. So I assume that in the short story, Stephen King's like, and the rat was their God. And like
the short story is more complicated. The short story is a little more complicated.
I look forward, Matt, to reading a blog post about how you would have done it.
Yes.
Because
not how you would have done this movie, but how you would have done the fanfic on who is the boss, the rats
yes.
or the monster.
Yes.
On your
subscribe to my Substack, yeah, right. The World According to Quinn.
This is more
premium,
erotic than I expected.
Stay tuned.
Premium yes. content for you pay me, I give you bonuses.
There's a lot of $200. Talented artists out there.
Not
we
that
can't,
much.
We can't wait.
Had you seen this before?
No, I let Matt choose blindly.
What about you?
No.
No, I'm not no, a I'm I've not a horror person.
Now, seen, okay, so I saw it. I'd seen it before. Yes. Yes.
Sorry.
I remember I went into, it was going to be a long weekend. My parents were going to be out of town. Uh-huh. So I went to the Blockbuster.
Uh-huh. Rest in peace.
And I saw the cover and I said, oh, that looks really cool.
It's got a sweet cover.
It's got a sweet cover. It's got a skull with like a headlamp, like a miner. I was thinking like maybe there's like ghosts or living dead.
God, the Crypt Keeper
like
is going to be in this movie. It's going
to
be sweet.
It's going to be awesome. Stephen King's all plastered all over it. So I got this. I went home. I watched it and I was like, oh, this is gross and stupid and about rats.
You didn't have to pay a late fee on this one.
I could swear I saw this in the video store when I was younger, because growing up, this was the age of really vivid horror movie covers. For movies I wasn't allowed to rent. So I remember a lot of these.
So you would go to the, it was Movie Gallery where I lived. We had Movie Gallery.
Which is, I think, still around more than Blockbuster is. Family Video and Movie Gallery aren't out of business.
Are they gone? I could swear they dragged on for a little while because they owned their own buildings and they leased parts of it, like gyms and stuff. Blockbuster, the last Blockbuster in Atlanta I was aware of, got turfed out of their shopping center because the landlord could rent that space out for someone who could pay more.
Could pay
go
all.
On, Kiko, sorry.
I was just going to say, so you would like look at the covers of things that you knew you couldn't like watch to, yeah. you know.
They were just very vivid.
We're just curious about them.
We are superficial creatures. That's the only reason anyone bought Goosebumps, right? Like, yeah. I think I own like 30 of them and read 12 of them because like, oh, the art's cool. Like, I'll buy this.
Well, I mean, also, this has nothing. That's the only reason why anyone saw that. Jack Frost movie with the snowman that comes to life and murders people. The lenticular cover.
Oh, no. Not like the cute one.
No, the horror movie one where it's like a snowman, and then as you move to the left, it turns into a skeleton.
Yeah, those are fun.
Also, I realize you're first of all, Charlie. You're right. It's a cool cover. But it has nothing to do with mining. There's not a single. There is not one hat with a light.
Is there a headlamp in this movie?
I don't think there is.
I don't think there was.
Flashlights because they keep dropping them.
What was the name of it? I think it's Kevin Smith said this was the Weinstein thing when he worked there. But you just get a cool idea, and it's just it's on the movie. It doesn't have to do with anything. Like it's.
They said here we're making a movie called Graveyard Shift. Artist.
Make me a creepy cover, right? It's like World War Z. Whoever made that movie had not read the book. It has nothing to do with the book.
No, like, and the beauty of a short story is there's no risk. You just jot a bunch of bullshit down on a bender, and if no one buys it, no one buys it. I mean, a film, you've got to... And these are real actors, okay? Like, okay, so I mean, people know how production works. We're not doing one movie in one night. The other movie, in contrast, none of these actors did anything else. Like, in this film, actors did things. I don't know what their going rate was, but surely they made some money, right? Because these people have been in many, many films. There's a commitment to this not being a stinker. And guess what?
Well, yes. They've been in many, many things because they're not big actors. They were all bit parts.
That's right.
I mean, I didn't recognize a single part. Well, I recognized the main guy.
I recognized one.
He looked vaguely familiar, but I couldn't tell you what he was.
Are you still talking about Graveyard Shift? You're talking about the other movie.
We're talking about Graveyard Shift, my friend. That's what we're going to talk about.
David Andrews. And of course, I recognized Brad Dourif. But then again, it was clear that he was the big star for this movie. And that sounds weird to say out loud.
Well, I mean, there's a reason why this is the only director, the only thing the guy directed, John Singleton. Like, he did an episode of Cagney and Lacey.
I don't know why. You make a movie like this, I don't know why nobody calls you back after that.
Right. He was the production assistant for Godspell in 1973. Like, the man has no credits. They must have dug him out of the dumpster. Although he did Stay Tuned episode. He was a unit production manager. That's it. For Murder at 1600, the Denzel Washington movie, which is strange. We can have fun with it. But here we are. The last act of this.
It gets so weird.
Yes. The last act of this is there's this basement, which apparently at one point was part of the mill, but it looks more like a swamp or a level from the game Doom. I don't know what to tell you. There's like just dripping water. Big Boy comes down the stairs with the ladder, which he used to spray the rats, and the ladder breaks when he freaks out.
Brogan.
Brogan.
We lose Brogan.
See you later, Brogan.
Is that a real name, by the way?
Sounds like a last name.
Oh, okay, maybe. I was like, that's not a real name.
No, it's not.
The other guy's name was Dunson, so it's probably their last names.
Okay, yeah.
We have an Ipsen, Brogan, Warwick, Danson. The lady gets a full name. She's Jane Wisconsin. Jane.
Since they're all one word names, I think that they're probably like last names.
Yeah. And again, I bet you they're well established full color characters in the short story. Which is just says cocaine 30 times and then yells rats.
They're terrible and forgettable, but I actually had a note that I liked the kind of play off the characters. Like,
yeah.
I thought that it was actually kind of fun. Like, it was gritty. The characters were not well fleshed out. They had a nice dichotomy. And I don't know. I mean, I enjoyed that aspect of it. I felt like they did an okay job. They acted as hard as they could.
I will say, though, like, take out some of the language. You don't really see any deaths other than the guy who's like inside the wing. You could have made this like a bad made-for-TV movie. It's just right there. Anyway, so the last act is they've all donned jumpsuits like they're prisoners or something, and they've decided to go clean up this basement. And then immediately it becomes an Aliens movie where they're like trying to escape back to daylight, and there's just like these things hunting him. And they at first think maybe it's just the rats. But then when Big Boy goes into and pulls out an arm, and the arm has a rat on it, everyone freaks out, and we realize we're in trouble. And since the dude breaks the ladder, they're stuck in the basement for the last 20 minutes, 15 minutes of this 80-minute movie.
It which drug is, on for so long.
Yeah. And yet, it just wouldn't end.
It and wouldn't end. There's like an underwater blood river, and there's like a coffin floating in it, which they hold on to.
Yeah,
like,
there, and then there's this under, and then there's this underground huge chamber
with like piles like, of
with piles of bones, like with cathedral like ceiling.
Yeah, mutant rats been down there a bit.
I mean, it's weird.
It's part of this. I think part of the tunnels under the mill connect to the graveyard because that's how they dispose of the exterminator. He's killed by a coffin crypt, like crushing him.
Yeah, dude, that makes no sense whatsoever. Yeah, all of a sudden, we're in a graveyard and a tombstone crushes him to death.
Yeah.
I wouldn't even, did the rat knock it onto him or something?
He deserved it because he abandoned his puppy. That was right after he was like, well, the dog's not worth this.
Which, I don't know which came first. It just reminded me of the dog from Silence of the Lambs that Buffalo Bill has. But this week on Property Brothers, he wants a blood river. She doesn't want rats. Are we going to make it work? Every episode of House Hunters is about two people about to get a divorce. So I figured this...
Is this the Aqua Teen episode with the house bleeding? Hey, man, I need you to make the blood flow again.
I figured the blood was from someone who died recently, like one of the other rat kills.
Maybe it was Brogan.
I think the cotton gin just has so much backlog.
It's like bodies just
maybe the house itself is bleeding. Like the building itself is evil and it's
haunted.
Alive.
It's very haunted. Yes. Where do you think this thing came from?
Right. It's a Teenage Mutant Ninja Crab Rat Scorpion.
Master Splinter has found that one, that strange American product called meth.
Oh my God, could you imagine?
Oh my God.
It's just Master
My sons.
It's Master
Give me that blue velvet or whatever that Walter White makes.
Please give me the drugs.
I mean, it's just you're Master Splinter on HGH. But I would like it though if, like Poltergeist, when they kill the Rat King, if the building just disappeared. Like it was just the end. And so he washes up in the next town, but this town has a pig problem instead of a rat problem. Like those wild Canadian boars that are taking over Montana.
40 to 60 feral hogs.
That's right.
And then eight-legged freaks queues up. It's spider time.
Previous episode?
Long ago. Wow.
Deep cut.
One day we might do arachnophobia.
Oh yeah.
We've talked about that one before too. But yeah, so the end of this is, it's funny because other than at the very beginning where dude dies, it's really like a pro-union movie for like 30 minutes where they're just like working in this hot room. There are rats everywhere. They treat them like garbage. Why don't you leave? Well, because I need the money. Sure, why not?
I think the union.
And then the last 10 minutes, different movie again, completely. And everyone dies. And by the way, they die in weird ways. And I can't figure it out. Why does the manager, when they rescue him from the bone pile, start stabbing them?
I think at that point he'd gone crazy.
I guess so. But was that after he decides to be a hero?
Well, no, right. Because they wanted to break. Okay, so like in these movies, usually two people survive, right? You've got like a guy and a girl, and they didn't know each other that well. But there was kind of some chemistry there, and they get out together, and everything's up to the imagination. And I feel like at the end of this movie, they were like, no, fuck that. Everyone's going to die except for Hall, and he kind of sucks anyway, but like it's in the short story, so fuck it. Like, we'll keep to that. And that's what happened.
Yeah, and there's not a final girl. It's the dude, and he's not okay with any of this. But you're right. I don't, like, because, so, the black guy gets his arm bitten off.
And then he gets dragged away.
And he gets dragged away.
Yep.
We have some crushing deaths. We have some monster deaths. But then our boneheaded Biff Tannen wannabe just goes nuts and murders her.
Yeah.
Straight up, like, takes a blade of some sort, goes like pelvis to sternum, just cuts her up. Strange. It's all strange.
This was his only out. Look, I got to play to my outs. This is the only way I'm getting out of
and
here.
And then he runs off into the tunnels with Hall chasing him, and he runs into the rat monster, and he makes himself somewhat useful by wounding it before he goes down.
It was a valiant fight, you know.
But and this is the only time, he's the only time we see the full whatever monster creation thing with its velvety wings wrapping around him, its hook tail, this. It's a lot.
Yeah, it's like the shark in Jaws. You don't really see very much of it for most of the movie. Like you see the wings or the head or the tail when it slips down into the water like a crocodile.
Or the Aliens movie. Like that's what it is.
Ratamorph.
Well, it did give me vibes. Every time you saw the rat monster bat thing kill, it wrapped the victim up in its wings.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever see Beastmaster?
No.
Yes.
You know what I'm talking about.
Yes, this is perfect.
Yeah, these like tall bat creatures would wrap their arms around people and like, you know, jiggle and then bones would fall out.
Mm-hmm. you just remind them to death.
Okay. But 8-year-old me was scarred by this.
Yes.
And so when I saw this,
I was scarred by the cow birth.
Wow, it's like a washing machine with teeth.
Well, I'm watching this, I'm like going, oh. And so, yeah. But I think the way it ends is really funny because, like, you say Warwick decides to be a hero. No, he doesn't decide to be a hero.
He does, though. No. He says, if I'm going to go to hell, we're going to go to hell together.
No.
So he's redeeming.
That's a suicide pact.
No. I have a different take. I have a different take. He embraces toxic masculinity and decides that I have to kill it because no one else can.
I think it's more spiteful.
I also think he realizes he's going to be sued into the ground, and if he doesn't show up with a Batman corpse, like,
well, yeah,
he's like, oh no, it killed everyone and burned the building down, but I have evidence. Like,
that's exactly what it is.
He knew something was up because he keeps hiring people to replace people who mysteriously disappear.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely knew something was up.
Yeah.
How have we not done Beastmaster? It has Rip Torn and Tanya Roberts in it.
I mean, I've actually suggested it twice, but
you have.
I've also suggested it.
Oh,
might have to do it soon then.
Before I forget, what is that Star Wars video? It's like the chicken duck thing.
The chicken duck.
I have no idea what it is.
It's like right now. What, I know what you're talking
about. Because
Star Wars chicken duck thing.
Because, you keep talking about it. You can't figure out what this critter is. Like the rat bat crocodile.
Okay,
that chicken, 39 times you fought the rat chicken duck thing.
So Matt, I love you, buddy. You are the most random human being on the planet, but you're referring to a song parody called The Bushes of Love. By Bad Lip Reading.
I was gonna say that's got to be one of
the
those
connections,
right?
your mind makes is just it's beautiful. It's beautiful.
Yes, it's by the ladies and gentlemen behind Bad Lip Reading, and it's called
it's the
Bushes of Love.
The Burning, right?
Yes, and you can look at you can check it up on Matt's Substack, where he's going to write 10,000 words about Bushes of Love. So at the end, our hero, everyone else is dead. And so he's the only witness to the death of 20 people. And he escapes into the daylight and decides it's time to leave town again.
And that's it.
And the sign goes up under new management.
But he has like a face off with the monster. The monster gets its little tailie stuck in the gin, this problematic gin that I'm sure if they just got some kind of like cover, you know, like. That like prevented.
If OSHA would just make a visit,
but
a higher price than $200.
In the final moments, though, the monster is about to get loose, and actually the monster does get loose. But he remembers that he has his slingshot and his Diet Pepsi cans that he carries with
product
him.
Product placement,
like a real hero.
And he slingshots to a big red button to turn the gin on to eat the monster. But here's what's weird. As I recall from the beginning of the movie, the gin is turned on and off by a lever.
Right.
Not exactly. A button. So
maybe it's like
maybe they forgot.
Maybe that's the failsafe though. Like if you can't get to the lever,
there's
maybe
a rat in the way.
There's somebody
Maybe it's like a lawnmower. You got to prime it before you pull the cord.
There you go. I mean, it is what it is. It's 110 in that room, and they destroy Rat King.
I don't know what to tell you. And it's, I think it's supposed to be like a bat. I think the head and everything is like a bat. It's like what a bat really looks like.
It's like a rat bat. It's like the natural evolution. Okay, so like the only thing that scares my wife more than a cockroach is the kind that fly, and that's the natural evolution. It's like a rat. Like, what's scarier than a rat?
Like a palmetto bug?
What's scarier than a rat? Like, well, one that flies and has crab claws. Fuck it.
And the scorpion.
In the short story.
Crab claws are a strong choice.
Yeah.
In the short story, the basement had been sealed up for like 100 plus years, and the rats had like speciated. Yeah. Like multiple different kinds of rats.
You read the short story?
Maybe a long time ago, because my dad has a collection, Night Shift, where Graveyard Shift is one of the stories.
Yeah.
It's probably up in the playroom at my parents' house.
Again, I love King, so I'll have to go.
Put the source material in the comments.
Yeah.
Because recommendation for this is don't actually watch this movie. Watch the trailer and then read the short story. You'll save yourself 2 hours. I mean.
Actually, you know what? That's as good a segue as any. So that's Steve's final thoughts. Giga, what are your final thoughts?
Rat actors are worth it. Sponsor your local rat actors, everyone.
I thought Ractors. This movie was surprisingly fun if you can like not like focus on it too much. If you like seeing people be like chopped up.
Casually.
It was okay. It was okay. If you're on the rat side, it's a pretty fun little movie. It's
Charlie, not enough tits. No.
Well, I mean, I'm struggling. Usually, I try to say something good about a movie.
Yeah.
I'm having a hard time with this one because it was complete garbage. Oh! The animal acting was good.
Yeah.
The animal trainer, whoever that animal trainer was top notch. Those rats were well done. The practical effects of the rats were great. That's it.
Matt?
I watched this in 2 45-minute sessions on my Kindle on the elliptical. So it's good for that. It's entertaining, I thought, and short. And it's one of those, I guess, see once because it's entertaining the first time around. But I don't know why you'd watch it again.
Yeah, don't watch it more than once.
I mean, I would say like, usually my line here is like, it's not great, but you know, you can watch this one with friends. Or like, if you're someone who suffers at all from anxiety, or like you've been known to have like a bad like trip on an edible, no, this is rats. Like, there's nothing like rats. You know, like there are stupid horror movies we've talked about where you're just like, yeah, I know, there's just someone killing people with a giant bobby pin in this killer workout scenario, that's fine. This, like, if you're at all unsettled by things, if you want a creature feature, see Tremors, right? Like,
oh yeah. Yes, please. Go because, see
like,
Tremors.
That's fun. That's stupid. It's got a bunch of heavily armed, like, militant, like, militia types on a roof with guns.
And it has actual Fred Ward, not low-rent Fred Ward.
And Reba McEntire.
Yeah. And Reba McEntire. As a gun-toting wife.
It's great.
That's awesome.
Like, this movie, if you're looking for a curiosity... This is a curiosity. And again, it's the rat actors. It's the weird costume at the end.
It's also for the Stephen King completist.
Yes.
Yeah.
But like, this is one that I'm not saying you have to skip. It's just not worth seeking out.
I would rather watch 1982 The Thing again.
Right.
Is there another movie called Graveyard Shift?
I'm sure there is.
Actually, if you Google it, there's like a ton of shit.
And the short story is
called... If you Google
called,
it, they find out the Graveyard
Shift. To their credit, if you Google Graveyard Shift, this crappy film is the first one that pops up. So I don't know what that means, but...
Well, and if you... And Matt remembered at first the short story, not the movie. And so if you look up Night Shift, there's about 7 movies as well called that. But just in general, I would say if you want to watch a King movie, watch something even stupider than this. Because this is unfortunately takes itself too seriously as well. Like, next week, stay tuned, we're doing Creepshow, and that's one he just wrote the scripts for, and that goes straight to Stupid City. And it's better for that.
And accent.
I mean, and funny enough, the last segment of Creepshow is what this could have been with the cockroaches. Mm-hmm. But instead, There's, I would have paid. I would have, if this wasn't free on HBO Max, how is there not a scene where 5,000 rats cover someone and just eat them to death?
I think that was in Salem's Lot.
Great, but it's not in the movie we're talking about, it's, which stars a rat.
Rats. Yeah, yeah.
Rats should be second billed. Truly. Anyway, we're out of time. I already tossed this to you, but next week in our Stephen King month, we're continuing our October Stephen King month with Creepshow. And then the hammer is coming right at the end of the month with Carrie. A nice, solid end. But please continue to do all the things that keep us on the charts. Keep reviewing us. Keep sharing us. Keep helping us get these downloads because we're in our 10th season. We want these big numbers because, again, we've now been doing it for a decade. Which means, by the rules that I set up with the guys, Scott and Daniel, when we first created the show, movies have to be 10 years old to talk about them. So movies that came out the year the podcast started, we can now talk about as we're getting towards episode 500. Thanks, everyone. Let's go eat some pizza.
Oh, my gosh.
Myopia Movies is a podcast production of Dude Letter Podcasting and is produced by Nick Hoffman. It is edited by Nur Trinette and Daniel Suttis and is hosted by Nick Hoffman, with production assistance by Matthew Quinn, Daniel Suttis, and Nur Trinette. The theme song is Surf Shimmy by Kevin MacLeod from incomptech.com. Licensed under the Creative Commons by Attribution 4 license, Creative Commons/licenses by /4.0. Thanks.